Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Good vibes, baby.
Afternoons on the Score.
I'm going to couch this so nobody writes that I thought of selling. Friends of mine have said, why don't you sell? Why don't you get out? And my answer always has been, I like what I'm doing, as bad as it is. And what else would I do? I'm a boring guy. I don't play golf. I don't play bridge. What else would I do? And I want to make it better. I want to make it better before I go.
There's been a lot of news on the White Sox over the last 24 hours. And I guess if you had to categorize it, the news is good? Question mark? Justin Ishbia is going to be more involved over the next few years, but only with cash infusions. And then there's the possibility of him getting more controlling shares between 2029 and 2033. And then he has the option to buy controlling shares in 2034. If Jerry wants to. So that's kind of what's going on with the White Sox.
He can pick up his own options, basically.
Yeah, it's a long option. Way down the road. But John Greenberg has been chronicling a lot of this stuff for The Athletic, and he was nice enough to give us a few minutes. He joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. All right, John, what was your read when you saw the statement that the White Sox put out?
Well, I mean, just that it was, you know, about time. Like, when I broke this story in February, you know, the Sox put out a statement to me, and I was the only, they told me, like, no one had even inquired. I was nervous someone else was going to beat me to it. And that no one else had inquired, and they said that there was no pathway, no talk of pathway to control. But every other person I talked to for the story said there's absolutely going to be a pathway to control, because why would Justin Ishbia, who is a billionaire, pass up on a chance to buy another team, even if it's the Twins, to give more money to Jerry Reinsdorf to have absolutely no say in anything, because he is like Steinbrenner. There's nothing more than limited than a limited partner of Jerry Reinsdorf. So it didn't make a lot of sense. So I knew some of the people involved in kind of brokering this, some of the big investment firms and lawyers. So it just made sense this was going to take a while to kind of, you know, get written down and everything to be agreed upon. Because when I heard about this, I heard there was going to be a runway of 4 to 5 years to go from limited to control. So that didn't surprise me.
That runway, John, like, what is Reinsdorf really just wanting that runway because he truly loves owning a baseball team? Or why not do this sooner? Why does he have the until 2034, essentially, option in his back pocket?
Yeah, I don't know if there's like some tax reasons or some estate planning reasons. You know, I'm going to inquire about that for that. But I think it's because, yeah, he likes owning this team. He likes showing up every day. I mean, that's one thing we know about Jerry is he loves owning the White Sox. He is at a lot of games, if not, you know, the majority of them at home. So this is just what he likes. And like you're, you know, the clip you guys played, he hasn't learned bridge. He's 89. I don't foresee him calling Omar Sharif and figuring out how to play bridge. So I think this is what he wants to do. And, you know, I put in my story that quote, you know, I did the news story today on it, that, you know, he's going to continue to be the sole decision maker, which I thought was an interesting.
Yeah, there was a lot of language in that, John, that honestly made me uncomfortable, to tell you the truth. Like, it felt like, yeah, we just kind of want to let everyone know who's still in charge, and this is we're going to do.
Yeah, that was, but I wrote, sole decision maker for a club that lost an MLB record 121 games last year and is in last place in the American League this year. So if you want to be in sole control of that club and you want to brag about that, you know, hey, it's his world.
What do you think the infusion of cash over the next two seasons does for the White Sox? Like, if you're a fan that's reading, yeah, it's going to help, you know, pay down some of the debt. How should a Sox fan look at that? And should they think, oh, well, then maybe baseball operations will get some more money?
Yeah, I think that would make sense. I think it's going to be more for, right, like the infrastructure type stuff, right? You know, like things like that. Maybe it's more, you know, if they need money for stuff in spring training or their training facilities. I don't think it's generally going to be for players right now. That wouldn't make a ton of sense given where the team is. I think it's going to, you have to tie this to the stadium, right? Like, I mean, he's someone who can fund a stadium. So is that going to be starting a process of renovation at the current stadium? Are they going to really try to jam another stadium in the 78 now that the Fire have called dibs? Or is it just, you know, to have that money, it gives you, when you have that money, it gives you a lot more options with any other kind of stadium locations. So I think the money, my guess would be put towards something more substantial than just like, you know, signing a free agent.
How do you think fans should react to this news today?
I mean, I think somewhat happy, right? Happy that it's finally like
in writing,
put in writing.
Yeah
exactly. Yeah. Like, I know people aren't happy it's not going to come right away, but I mean, like, when I reported in February, I said it's not going to happen right away. Like, I think people kind of knew that. In another sense, Jerry's 89, so he doesn't have, I mean, 2034, like, is very, I hope Jerry lives forever, but that's pretty optimistic, right? So, you know, the question I had, like, if you look at the writing of it, and like Lawrence said, the writing is really interesting, is it, I think they kind of include, like, or, like, there was under no circumstances could have happened before 2029. So would that mean if Jerry, for some reason, you know, it passes away, would his kids then control it till 2029? And then could they do, you know what I mean? Like, that was the part that was kind of like I was wondering about a little bit.
Me too. The idea of a succession plan without the actual Reinsdorf children being involved in it in a short-term situation is fascinating to me.
Yeah, and listen, like in February I wrote that Reinsdorf came to Ishby about this. That's what I found that out for pretty good sources, that this wasn't him saying going to Jerry. Jerry came to him because he knew about the interest in the Twins. And so, like, I think, you know, there are people out there, especially people connected to Jerry or connected to the White Sox, that were like, they made it sound like Ishby was kind of pushing this and pushing it out, which certainly wasn't the case from my perspective. I think this is an idea of like kind of estate planning of Jerry kind of getting and his kids getting this in order, because it's a huge deal.
The other news that's happened with the White Sox over the last 24 hours has to do with CHSN. And I would say that this is really good news for half of the viewing audience in Chicago that still has Comcast as their cable provider and Xfinity as their cable provider and Comcast as their internet provider. The games are going to make their way over to Comcast, John. So is that something to celebrate?
I mean, yeah, now the all these fans that are complaining actually have to watch the White Sox. So, like, you know, it's not exactly like, be careful what you wish for, right? I think it's great. I mean, this is, again, something that's really overdue. I can't believe, you know, they went the whole basketball and hockey season. But again, like, other markets have dealt with this for years.
Yep.
You know, I mean, L.A. had it with the Dodgers. Most of the people weren't getting those games.
Denver.
So Chicago's actually been pretty, right, Denver, Houston. And we wouldn't have Layla if not for, like, the disaster in Houston. So, like, I think Chicago's been pretty lucky, you know, with the RSNs. And, thankfully, the fans didn't really miss much this year with the Bulls and the Blackhawks, nor did they miss much so far in this White Sox season. So it's a really good news, and it's kind of nice to see, like, the White Sox, all these things kind of getting in order next. And who knows, maybe they'll have stadium news soon. Maybe that's the next domino to fall. Or it's just, you know, the next news is Shane Smith's All-Star nod. Either one.
I mean, you're right. It's been a good run. You got a Pope. You got a new owner. You got a TV deal. There's a lot going on. That's a very good thing. One more thing before I let you go, because I know that you got stuff that you need to do, and we appreciate you making time for us today, John. Do you, from what people have told you, is there room at the 78 for the White Sox?
You know, that's a great, and I was trying to look at, like, I was literally pulling up, like, maps yesterday, trying to, like, figure it out, like the maps they've made of it. And I talked to a guy yesterday I know who's actually is a real corporate real estate attorney who works in stadium deals, out, like, not in some in Chicago, some outside the market. He said it's possible, like, that, you know, but, like, not like, yes, it's easy to fit two stadiums in there. I mean, I've walked around. Have you guys walked around it?
Yeah, I love it. Is it Ping Tom Park? It's so beautiful down there.
Do you think they could fit two in there? Like, that seems to be awfully tight.
I think that the infrastructure for it too, like trying to get people in and out of there, seems real. I think the a fire stadium is perfect, and any more than that might be overkill.
That's kind of what I agree with you. That's what I went and walked around that, like, the Sod Father's Field of Dreams he built there. I just didn't see, like, a baseball stadium with the parking. I think the rate is something like 70, it's like, or 60 something acres, right? I looked it up the other day, or 62 acres, whatever it is. It's the rate in all those parking lots together are, like, you know, basically the equivalent of what they have there, I think. So that would be, if you could put two stadiums there, there'd be no parking. So I don't know. I don't know if that makes, if it's such a good idea when it's, you have to force it in that much.
John, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it. Congratulations on all the success at The Athletic, and thanks for helping us out with this story.
Anytime for you guys.
Bye.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
You wouldn't do that kind of investment if you didn't ultimately want to gain control of the club. Jerry Reinsdorf has made it clear that at some point he wants to sell it. How that process works is the big question that nobody can seem to answer right now.
That was Maury Brown. He's, of course, a noted baseball insider. This is Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score, and we are following the breaking news. The White Sox have created a succession plan that they have announced, stating that Justin Ishbia, who bought minority shares of the team a few months ago, is now going to take over for Jerry Reinsdorf beginning in 2029.
The Pope got this done. I'm convinced of it. 708 on the text line, just loving the thought that Pope Leo's phone is blowing up with White Sox alerts and he's texting friends in a Sox group. It's possible.
Did somebody make a call from the Vatican?
Listen, like, Jerry, it's time. It's time.
Well, and also, one of the texters that we got, we are taking calls on this. We are taking texts. We are taking Twitch chats. The number, as you know, 312-644-6767. We appreciate all the interaction. It is twitch.tv/670thescore. But also people just wanting to make sure Jerry's okay. Like 708 said, here's hoping Jerry Reinsdorf's health holds up during this entire transition. And I hope so, too. That's ideal. You know, you want him to enjoy whatever retirement from this, also, that he can. He's 89 years old right now.
He's been a steward of this team for so long. And, you know, he mentioned even in his press release that, you know, he's been in baseball for nearly 50 years. And the team did win a championship under his watch. There have been more tumultuous times since then. But listen, I think this is great news for anyone who wished that the White Sox would start acting like a big market team because they play in the third largest market in the country. You're getting new money, and it ain't old money, but it's new money, and it's a lot of it when you talk about the Ishbias.
Yes, who are out and about in the community, as we've seen as well. Let's go to the phones. We have a lot of calls on this. Where should we start? How about JP and Addison?
Yep.
JP and Addison, you're on with Rahimi and Harris on The Score.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm just really curious. Did the Reinsdorf reach out to them when they were in the process of trying to bind the Twins and like, hey, you know what? We have something a little closer to home for you. Yeah. That and the Pope. You know, it was definitely the Pope.
Yeah.
When in doubt, Pope.
My tongue is pressed firmly against my cheek when I say this, but the Pope. Yeah, like that's a thing. It's a belief system now for a lot of Sox fans who would take anything to save them from what we've witnessed over the last season and a half.
And JP, just in case you want to know, there is some reading, of course, that you can do previous to what has happened today. We had Bruce Levine on earlier, the last segment, talking about the process in place that led to this. But this was initially reported that Justin Ishbia was going to buy more minority shares of the White Sox a couple months ago, and that he was pulling out of his interest with the Twins. So if you want, you can go back to John Greenberg's story, for example, with The Athletic, the reporting that Bruce has done, the reporting that other White Sox and other reporters in the city have done, leading to this point where Bruce told us this was essentially formality, this announcement. But knowing what I know about the White Sox and how they don't make huge announcements, like, for example, Ozzie Guillen wasn't fired, he was traded, as we talked about in the last segment. Robin Ventura's contract lapsed. They don't do a lot of firings. Rick Renteria was rare. Tony La Russa left for health reasons. You know, they've now hired Will Venable. We know Pedro Grifol was fired, but the point here is, culturally, it's significant that they made this announcement in this way.
It's a grand announcement, but also I think the light at the end of the tunnel for people who wanted to see what would happen next when Reinsdorf left. There's a lot of questions we don't have answered in terms of what will they do about their ballpark situation.
Right. And that was something that Bruce addressed as well, because we know that there is going to be a soccer stadium built on the 78, according to the Chicago Fire a few days ago. Let's continue with the phones and our callers, 312-644-6767. We got to talk to the man. Mario in Hyde Park is on with Rahimi and Harris.
Hey, what's up, Marshall Harris?
Hello, what's up,
Rahimi? Hi, Mario.
I'm a White Sox fan. I should probably have my head examined for still being a White Sox fan, but I am. And I'm having a real hard time. First of all, I'm sorry. This is so, so White Sox. Sell the team. Why do you have to wait until 2029 to do anything? Sell it. Sell it so it can get better. It's not getting, it's getting watchable, but it isn't getting better. They've lost 221 games the past two seasons. They've only won, what, 21 games this season. And if you're selling it to Ishbia, who has all the money he could ever want in his life, how about not move the team, but do something with those 70 acres of parking you got and develop Bridgeport? Make your stadium across from the current stadium. How about fixing something you've wronged yourself with since you own the team and actually put some investment into that neighborhood? Scattering this nonsense over years, dude, nothing is guaranteed to anyone. But the idea that I, as a White Sox fan, have to wait until it's convenient health-wise, money-wise, or business-wise to do something that should have been done a long time ago. Sell the damn team. Sell it. Keeping it does not keep me happy. Sell it. So if you're going to do this with Ishbia and he has money to invest, there's no reason to leave Chicago. There's no reason to not redevelop. I'm sorry, you can't redevelop something you never developed. There's no reason to not develop that neighborhood. There's no reason to actually do something with 70 acres of parking that I don't care if the Savannah Bananas play there every day. You still won't get people to fill the parking lot up. Sell the team. Sell it now.
I appreciate you invoking the Savannah Bananas, and Mario, we really appreciate your phone call. And it,
always with
he,
Mario.
He has a point.
He always does.
But unfortunately, it's still Jerry Reinsdorf's team, so he could do as he likes, because that's how ownership works when you talk about professional sports.
I think this is the closest we're going to get to sell the team.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to say in so many words, is that I think Jerry and the White Sox don't do big wholesale changes like we've seen. So I think in so many words, this announcement is telling you he's selling the team. The fact that they're telling you it's happening in 2029, that's the big piece of this. And you're right. When does that money start to come in? How does that transition work? What are the details? Hopefully we see some evidence of that earlier than that time.
The optimist in me believes the money is already rolling in. As given in the PR release, the 25 and 26, I just don't know if that money's going to the right place in terms of infrastructure for your minor leagues and also major league budget.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
I just actually relate to the White Sox. You know, my dad pitched for them from 83 through 87. I think back to my childhood, and it was Chicago. It was catching lightning bugs, going to Comiskey, and it had the yellow paint on all the railings, and I used to sit there as a kid and pick the paint, and I probably ate too much of it. It was the organ. It was the mascots.
Roy Bannister. Bannister, of course, since the All-Star break, is 4-0. That left-hander starting to come alive. Here's the 3-2 pitch. Struck him out, and he got it in a good spot.
And now Vernon Wells not happy with the strike zone, but Brian Bannister is thrilled. Bannister has retired 13 of the last 14.
I think he brings a lot to the table. I think he's got a lot to offer as far as pitch design.
I talked with a lot of different people who extol his virtues and say that, you know, he's one of the best guys around, and I think there's great reviews on Brian.
He's been awesome. He pretty much has revolutionized some of the pitchers in our game, especially the guys that sink the ball, the seam shift. I joke, I call him the seam shift god.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on the Score.
That was Eric Fetty who called him that. We like to call him the director of pitching for the White Sox, and it's nice enough to join us here on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. Brian, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it. You have in front of you two people who are huge fans of what's gone on with Shane Smith this season. How have you guys gotten him to this place that he's in right now?
Good to be here. You know, Shane is an extremely talented pitcher. It's a great story being undrafted, going through some injury stuff. We just really liked how his fastball performed at AA and AAA last year for the Brewers. And, you know, there were some other interesting ingredients there where he added the changeup, kind of refined it with the seam shift stuff. And he's gone out there and pitched like an all-star, in my opinion. And it's been fun to watch him way outperform compared to your typical Rule 5 pick. But he's a classy guy. He's worked hard. He's come in prepared. And just exciting to watch him every time out, especially what he just did against the Tigers.
Was on my list. What did you identify in Shane Smith? You said how the fastball was performed and then a couple different ingredients. That's a little vague. Come on, what was it? What'd you see? Everybody's wondering what you saw, Bannister and Shane Smith.
You know, it was a group effort. I'll give credit to the whole R&D group, which keeps getting better every day, the stuff we've been doing behind the scenes. But what's interesting is his fastball doesn't ride. You talk about vertical movement or you talk about hop or ride. His fastball doesn't do that. It actually has randomness to it. Sometimes it cuts. Sometimes it backs up. He hides the ball really well. He gets really big extension, similar to a Grant Taylor. So there's just a lot of unique ingredients with his fastball that I think gives hitters fits. And then he can also spin it really well. And he's added that late nasty changeup. And it's become a complete package. And he's electric every time out.
Brian, when it comes to discussing things with pitchers, what's the process for you to figure out how much information you can give them in whatever form it is? Like, some guys clearly want to talk about what happens statistically. Some guys want to talk feel. Some people want to talk finger pressure. Like, how do you go about figuring out what type of learner you have inside of the pitching infrastructure?
I think we try to identify what their strengths are, because there's a lot of ways to get hitters out, but too much information can almost work against the pitcher. And so we try to bucket it down to, here's what you are, here's what we think you can do really, really well. And we try to give them a lot of information vertically, like in a very narrow space. If you sink the ball, we're going to teach you a lot about sinkers. If you spin the ball really well, we're going to teach you a lot about breaking balls. But we're not going to say everything about everything, because that can just be information overload. and we don't want them thinking too much out there, but we want them being really good at what they do well.
Was there ever a point in your career where that was something that, because you clearly are a pitching geek, and I say that with love, but was there ever a point when you were pitching where you're like, man, I'm not getting what I need how I need it?
A lot of my career, because when I pitched my first full season with the Royals in 2007, that was the year that PitchFX Sport Vision first came out, and that was the first year we had information on pitching. And I made a lot of mistakes along with my teammate Zach Greinke trying to figure some of this stuff out because there was no handbook on how to use it all. So a lot of my career was actually me stumbling upon good things and also making mistakes on how to use this information. But through that process, I was able to extract a lot of good principles and pass it along to these pitchers who I joke are way better than I was, and save them the trouble and the hassle of making the same mistakes that I did, and just make their career more streamlined and easier and get them to their ceiling performance-wise as fast as possible.
Oh, man, Zach Greinke. Now, there's a smart guy and a curious guy, and that's what I've heard, you know, asking somebody who knows you, Brian, like, well, hey, what do you love about Brian Bannister? The person said his curiosity, he's curious about everything. I love that because the whole pitching universe is insane. Like, people don't know how to keep arms healthy, and it's the most expensive and most valuable thing in the sport, and yet we can't do it. So you must have a passion and a curiosity for what you do. It's not like you know everything. You're still trying to learn everything, aren't you?
Yeah, and we use, you know, we steal it from the software world. We iterate through things. We don't claim to know it all, but we'll take a pitcher and we'll try something for a couple pitches. And we'll see if it's better than what he was doing before. If it's worse, we move on right away. If it's better, we stick with it and keep experimenting with it. But we've had so many pitchers now. There's so much data out there. There's hundreds of millions of pitches that have been captured over the last two decades. So we can really leverage that information and help guys make better decisions faster. But at the same time, we want those happy, fortunate accidents to happen. Similar to a Shane Smith changeup, where all of a sudden it just takes off and it becomes one of the better pitches in the sport. We always want those fun accidents to happen because we don't want to just bottleneck these guys with what we've done in the past. We always want to let them offer up something new because their anatomy, their pitching style, the way their hand grips the ball, sometimes there's always unique combinations. And we want to allow that to happen organically.
Brian Bannister is the director of pitching for the Chicago White Sox, and he's on the Spiegel and Holmes show here on The Score. We did some reporting about the R&D department that you referenced earlier in the interview as a highly expanded, you know, analytics realm, now rebranded R&D. Can you tell us about how that department is helping and if it's integrated into pitching and hitting and minors and majors? Tell us how that's working, because that can be a difficult thing to ramp up inside an organization.
Yes, and just being with my two previous organizations, I had the opportunity to kind of do an A-B test. So here's what I had before, here's where we're at, and kind of just use those experiences to share with the very talented analysts that we had, Chris Getz, Josh Barfield. So kind of the advantage of coming in from another organization or having been in multiple places is you can just share, this is what we had, or this is what we were working on, and able to upgrade workflows and processes. But really, when you came in, we were behind just objectively. We had the talent. It wasn't organized very well, and we have completely done a 180 in that department. And the biggest areas that as an organization we've gotten better at is both our R&D department and what we're doing in Latin America. And so being able to take these talented analysts, organize the data right, clean up the data, build good reports for the coaches, build good systems that make our decisions happen quicker, and then take somebody like myself or Ryan Fuller on the hitting side, my counterpart on the hitting side, and be able to just have great discussions with the coaches, the minor league players, and just kind of build organization-wide systems and processes that make us better and help us make decisions faster that are more accurate.
Are you confident that when a Noah Schultz or a Hagen Smith hits the big leagues, they'll be coached the same way with the same kind of information, delivered the same style that you learned that they best succeed with? Are you comfortable that that consistency will be there?
That's actually the primary goal of what I try to build on the pitching culture side, is I want to empower all the coaches. I want us to use our own internal lingo, our own terminology on what we believe and be confident in that, to collaborate and talk about all those concepts every single day. And whether you have Matt Zaleski, our pitching coordinator, or Kurt Hassler, who's been our bullpen coach at the major league level, Ethan Katz, who I worked alongside with in San Francisco at the major league level, it doesn't matter who is interfacing with one of the pitchers. We're speaking the same language. We're using accurate data, objective data, but really we're just tailoring it to what they do, how they need to move. And we've grown by leaps and bounds in the last 2 years, and it's one of the things I'm most excited about. We have, you know, one of, if not the cheapest and youngest pitching staffs in Major League Baseball, but these guys keep coming up and contributing. There's upside surprises. That's always one of my metrics for are you operating well as a player development department, is do players surprise to the upside? You have industry consensus evaluations, and do players consistently outperform those expectations? That's when you know you're doing it right, when the players are getting the most out of their ability, or even stumbling upon something new that takes them to another level. And that's what's fun, and I think that's when people are enjoying their jobs and looking forward to coming to the ballpark every day because they know they might get better. But they know they're always going to have open, transparent communication. And that's when you start winning ball games and things start trending to the upside.
What's your approach when it comes to whether or not a pitcher needs to just drill down on the things that they do really well versus experimenting? Like maybe it's a guy with two pitches and you're saying, you know, they could use a changeup or a slider, and here's how we can form that pitch up for them. How do you decide on, this is what this guy is, and that's what he needs to stick to, versus he could be even better if he experiments?
I spend just as much of my time helping pitchers understand their strengths or developing something new as I do taking things away and telling them not to do anything more. Just be really, really good at what you're doing right now. Practice those mechanics. Practice that repeatability and that command. Just be more confident throwing it in any count. A lot of times pitchers always want to add something new, and our goal is to give them an arsenal that will compete and be functional at the major league level. But then beyond that, we just want them to repeat and be as consistent as possible. There is a point where you just keep tinkering too much, and so we spend just as much of our time taking things away from pitchers or telling them, don't keep tinkering, don't keep trying something new. Just be happy with where you're at and just be better at that. And so it's a balance between the two sides.
Brian, there's an opportunity when the runway's kind of long, when you're a few years away as an organization and the big bus needs to take a big turn, you know? And I'm wondering if you take advantage of that. The pause for Colson Montgomery on the hitting side to go to swing school in Arizona and then go back, and that has had some good effects. And then I saw the pause for biomechanical work for, who was it, Iriarte and Hagen Smith? Is that right? I think it was those two.
Yes.
It was that seemed like a novel concept. Do you guys take advantage? Are you taking advantage of the long runway with some creativity? It's what it seems like.
Yes, we do have new resources. You know, Chris and Jerry have given us really helpful tech. But the big thing is we just want these pitchers to pitch in the style that's best for them. One of the nice things, and I just spent the week with Hagen, you know, we had access to a new lab. He had a great coach in Matt Hobbs at University of Arkansas. They were capturing a lot of data on him when he was at his best, being the national pitcher of the year in college. And so we were able to go back and compare some of the things he was doing with Matt Hobbs and get him back to his best. You know, he has no problem striking people out, but the way he was using his legs, the walk rate was a little higher, and we just identified some things. And we're able to jump in there, compare the data from 2 years ago to now, and clean some stuff up and even make some improvements on top of that. And it was a great week with Hagen.
Same with Iriarte. He was getting a little long with his arm stroke, leading some walks. His pitch shapes were off a little bit. We're able to tighten up his arm stroke, get him back to what he was in 2023 with the Padres, the stuff he liked to do then, and the stuff that we saw on the scouting side that we were impressed by. And so, you know, just because the minor league season, kind of that archetype was set up many, many decades ago, doesn't mean that's actually the best way to develop players. If we have the opportunity to use some of our new resources to make these guys better or to identify upgrades or changes quicker, we're going to be a little more proactive. And the agents have been great. The players are on board. It's like, let's get you back to your best so that you can go out and compete at the best version of you, instead of just kind of doing the every 5 day routine, but struggling a little bit or feeling like something's off. Let's just leverage all our resources and get you back out there and get you in the big league sooner rather than later.
White Sox director of pitching, Brian Bannister, joining us here for a few minutes on Spiegel and Holmes. Let me go to the darker side of that. What are the guardrails that are in place for the psychology of pitchers in a long runway? There might be a lot of people that are inside the White Sox organization that are looking at it and saying, man, you know, the process, it sounds and it looks great, and I might be getting these individual results that are going on, but the team is not getting the results, and we are dealing with human beings. How do you keep the pitchers on task even when the win-loss results at the major league level haven't been there?
You know, the starting rotation has done great. We've admittedly been behind. We have a young bullpen and an experienced bullpen. You look at our run differential, the way we've pitched compared to last year, and last year, you know, we obviously bottomed out from a win-loss perspective. But the goal is to keep trending where we're pitching better, we're hitting better. There's positive developments in all these young players, and we will continue to fill out the roles, particularly in the bullpen, via internal promotions and external acquisitions. So if you look at how we've played this year, we've drastically outperformed 2024, but we haven't been able to close out as many games. We don't have an obvious closer, an obvious eighth inning guy, but we also have identified players both internally, externally, that we'd love to fill those roles as we continue to bring all these players to the surface at the major league level. So when the Hagen Smiths, when the Noah Schultz, the Grant Taylors, the Braden Montgomerys, the Colson Montgomerys, the Bonhamers, the Teals, as all these players start to float to the surface in the next year, it's going to be really fun from a fan perspective to see these talented young players all play together. And it'll also give us, because of our, you know, preparation, the way we're making decisions now as a front office, being able to fill in the gaps with players from the outside that'll complement these young players. And so you're going to see a continued trend to the upside as they become our new core, and we're able to fill in the gaps externally.
You mentioned Grant Taylor. A lot of people surprised to see him pegged for the bullpen as opposed to starting pitcher where there's more innings. What's the thought?
You know, there's a lot of thought that goes into these decisions. I've seen the obvious reactions from the fan base, social media, the media, and they're all valid. You know, the interesting thing about Grant is when you look at how he pitches and his characteristics, he's very similar to a Tyler Glasnow. He's very similar to a Clase, to a Kenley Jansen, to I don't compare people to Mariano, but he has that kind of flexibility. Mariano is in his own category, but, you know, when you look at, the guys in this category, how they're most effective, the types of injuries they tend to have, how they're used, the best, you know, Grant releases the ball about 7.5 feet, in front of the rubber. So he's out there releasing it where Kenley, Glasnow, all those guys release it. And you've seen the guys that have pitched in a starting role with those types of features, and they tend to be very injury prone, and we've already gone through that with Grant a little bit. So in the short term, we're looking out for his health, for how we can get him to the big leagues and contributing in the best way possible, but not pigeonholing him in a relief role, but also acknowledging that when you compare his pitch metrics, what he can do as a pitcher, it compares with some of the best closers in the world. So, you know, short term, he definitely has that kind of upside. And then people, you know, want to compare him to Skeens, et cetera, that have those types of velocities. We are totally open to him continuing to pitch in a starting role. But between managing his workload, dealing with his past injury history, and giving him maximum upside and maximum ability to contribute to the Chicago White Sox and have an outstanding major league career, we made that decision in the short term. And he's electric. I've seen him up close a couple times. It's one of the best arms I've ever seen, and I don't say that lightly because I've been around a lot of good arms. So it's somebody the fans are going to enjoy watching, and we're just trying to do what's best for him.
Brian, before we let you go, obviously the score has a lot of moms and dads that have young people who play baseball. Some of them are probably on their way to their field or their complex right now. For an amateur arm, what do you think are best practices and things that parents should be looking out for their athlete?
It's a great question, and I consult for a lot of families locally. I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, so a lot of families reach out on the same topic. And the thing I typically say is make sure you get 6 weeks of throwing in and progressively ramp up your arm before you get off a mound. Kids love to just jump up there and try and throw hard right away. The arm takes time to build up. So make sure, you get some long toss in, that you take it easy. And then the big thing nowadays, just with all the travel ball, which wasn't a thing when I was even in high school, now 25 years ago, kids are playing year round, and honestly, they never give their arms a break. So if you zoom out a little bit, look at a bigger macro cycle, build in some downtime for your arm, throughout a calendar year. There's pressure to be at every tournament, every event, every showcase, to always be stepping on the accelerator 100%. But back off, play a different sport, play some soccer, play some basketball, do something else, and you'll stay healthier long term. Arm injuries are a part of the sport, especially with what it takes to be a major league pitcher nowadays and just the increasing velocity across the game. You'll never get away from the risk of an arm injury, but you can do your best to prepare your son to just be healthy. By making sure he's built up and then building in some downtime every calendar year.
Brian, I declare that the White Sox are turning a corner. What, about a week and a half ago? I'm getting some crap from some of the fans and some colleagues, to be honest. But you're a big part of the reason why. This was really, really informative and really, really great for Sox fans to hear. So thanks for doing it.
No, I appreciate it. Always glad to be here.
To kind of recap what's happened today, the White Sox put forth a kind of succession plan of ownership that takes us all the way out to 2034. Nothing is going to happen with the Ishbias, according to this, until at least 2029, other than them adding some money into the coffers of the White Sox, and then they can progress into buying controlling shares of the team. Maybe, if Jerry allows for it to happen, the earliest that they can start gaining controlling interest is 2029, and then in 2034, they have an option to buy controlling interest of the team. Maybe.
This is the great pacifier of Jerry Reinsdorf. He is seeing you, the crying baby, right now, upset, wanting them to sell. Are they going to sell? I'm scared you're going to sell. Just sell the team. But sell, like, people chanting, sell. All right. Jerry's like, I'm going to get you a pacifier here, but here's the deal. Make sure you read really closely everything that's actually going on with it, because, yeah, I'm going to sell the team, but probably not until 2034. He's given himself options. They are team options for Jerry Reinsdorf to just – everybody just relax.
Everyone relax.
Just everybody relax. I'm still in control here. Give me another good 6 or 7 years of complete autonomy. Autonomy of not spending money on the right people and continuing to tear down this org. Give me 6 or 7 more years and then I'm out. Are we good? I don't know.
So the other piece of news, and I did a whole episode on House of L if you want to go check it out. The other piece of news happened last night, and it's the fact that CHSN is going to, hopefully tomorrow, that's the word on the street, is tomorrow. If you're a Comcast customer, you will get CHSN tomorrow. if you go to the ultimate tier. That it's going to cost you $20 a month.
Extra $20 in your bill.
If you are a Comcast customer and you have been paying for the empty regional sports network, the one that me and Layla used to work at, NBC Sports Chicago, which hasn't existed since September of last year. If you've been paying for that, because you probably have, you should look at your bill. They're going to credit you $8.80 a month for that because you haven't had a regional sports network to look at since September of last year. That's about 1 million households of people who are Comcast customers that have not been able to watch games on their system. You could have bought the digital antenna and done an over-the-air signal on 62.2 and 62.3, but if you're a Comcast customer, you now will have the option of watching White Sox, Bulls, Blackhawks, and what I think is some really good programming over on CHSN. And I think that now that more people be able to watch it, they're going to find out how well David Haugh is doing over there. And I keep trying to tell people this because I feel like I have a good radar for this. Brooke Fletcher is a star.
It's very good. Very good.
She's so good that I'm not sure how long she's going to be here.
That's always the caveat.
And I saw her last week on Windy City Live, and I was like, oh yeah, yep, yes.
Uh-huh.
That I can see that.
Yeah, that's where you want that. Right?
Yeah,
right
I can see that being a thing.
Sure.
And all of a sudden, 2 years from now, we look up and be like, oh, there she is on Good Morning America.
Uh-huh.
Sounds about right.
Amen, man. I saw Ruthie Polinsky was a big part of
what
they're doing. Ruthie is awesome. You hear her on The Score. Saw her at Hallis Hall with Clay Harbor, was out there.
And he's also on CHSN, usually wearing three buttons unbuttoned. Shout out to Clay.
Clay's putting me on a program, by the way. That's a scary consideration because he does all these workout apps and classes. And
I love this.
He's about as cut as it gets. He like looked at me and said, Grody, he's like, I can get you on a program, man. And I kind of laugh. He's like, no. He's like, I'm serious, man. I'm going to get you on a program.
It's nice to be able to reach out because I wouldn't say that I'm on a program, but Olin has been very helpful.
Yeah.
When I've gone to him and I've said, like, I want to do some stuff.
Here's what I need to do.
And he's been like, do this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, hey, I've always, like, and believe it or not, I'm not in good shape right now, but
you're getting there.
I am going to get there.
I see it.
And I will. I'll get there. Don't worry about me. I just go through my phases here. But in times of my life when I have hired a trainer, they're very helpful. They really are. Like, I mean, you can probably get some duds, but they hold you accountable. And, you know, Clay Harbor, look at the guy. That's a guy who can get you. Olin Krutz, look at the guy. These guys know exactly how to get you where you need to go.
Yep.
So
it's nice to have a resource like that where I can be like, hey, I'm trying this. What else should I do? And Olin be like, look, do this, 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 this. And I'm like, okay. Okay, I got it.
You and I have like sponsors.
It's nice.
Athletic sponsors. Mine is Clay and yours is Olin. This is neat.
It's nice. Yeah. Well, I mean, I had the benefit of having those guys, being around those guys like once a week.
Yeah, you did.
And Matt Forte is the one who's like, stop running on concrete.
Really?
And I'm like, I will be done with that.
Interesting.
He's like, why would you do that?
Just for obvious reasons.
Yeah, for running on concrete. He's like, you're old. Like, don't do that anymore.
I'm why would you do that?
I'm like, you got it.
Right.
So it's been helpful. Mm-hmm. It's been since the Super Bowl.
You've been good. Okay.
Yeah, I've been good.
I hit a good spot lately. Like literally, like I went a month strong, and now I got to get back on track. I've had a bad week, but I'll get there.
See, for me, the issue, like I have the discipline to work out every day.
Yeah.
The diet is the issue.
Diet is the issue, man.
And so now I've been more disciplined in that.
Okay. Good for you. I was for a while.
You put those two things together.
Good things.
And you drop weight.
Yes. Yes. It's not that. That's why I was like, don't worry about me. The formula is simple and I'll get there eventually. Bears.
Yeah, you will. Yeah, bears.
Bears.
It's 10 bears for you.
Oh, somebody actually gave me 3 bears just for my take on the deep dish pizza. Because, of course, that is definitely hitting a certain segment of the population who just think we are about deep dish pizza.
7.5 bears.
That's what I get?
Yes.
I don't know. Like, that's a very controversial thing. How many bears does me, the founder of the bear scale, get? Shouldn't I tip
unlimited,
the scale?
Unlimited bears.
I think that's it. Unlimited bears. That's what I have.
That should be the name of your next podcast, too, by
unlimited
the way.
Unlimited bears.
Unlimited bears of Mark Grody.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Unlimited bears.
The next time you host solo, that needs to be the name of the show.
Oh, I think that sounds great. Somebody write that down. Thank you.
All right, good. Yeah. Thank you guys for writing that down.
Yeah.
well, you hope to be here in 2029, but what do you make of the news of Mr. Reinsdorf possibly transferring ownership to Mr. Ishbia?
Yeah, you know what? We've been dialed in so much here. I haven't thought about it or talked to anybody about that at all.
Welcome back. It's Molly and Hush, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That was Will Venable answering the question about the big news of Thursday about the transfer of the White Sox, or of power, of ownership, but Justin Ishbia will be in the mix, according to the White Sox statement by the team and Jerry Reinsdorf. Brings us to our next guest, who will join us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your all-weather tire, Aturo.com. David Sampson is the host of Nothing Personal, and he joins us now. Good morning, David. How are you?
I am doing great. Good morning.
Well, thank you for joining us, because I know that you have thoughts on Jerry Reinsdorf and the White Sox sale to Justin Ishbia. What was your reaction when you saw the news break yesterday?
I think it was people so badly misunderstood this news. The headline was White Sox sold, Jerry stepping down, the end of an era. Jerry Reinsdorf is going to keep running that team until he passes away, and that was always his plan. This change of control could happen when he's 98 years old. That's 2034. That's when Justin Ishbia has the right to take over. Now, in the years before that, Jerry Reinsdorf has the right to give him the team, meaning give over control, but that's never been his plan. From an estate planning standpoint, the Bulls were going to stay in the family and the White Sox were going to be out of the family. This is just standard what he was going to do. And the announcement was done because the White Sox needed current day capital infusion and got it from Justin Ishbia in return for this future date, way far from now, of the carrot of taking over.
And do you have any clue as to what that capital infusion means? I mean, I read everything and I understand the technicalities of it, but I'm just curious. Do you have any further understanding of what it means? I mean, are they going to start getting players? Are they going to start getting a building? What exactly changes?
So when you take on partners, anytime you're an owner of any asset, it's something called the sources and uses of funds. The source of funds, in this case, Ishbia. The uses of funds are generally one of three things. One, you pay down debt, meaning you take in money from people and you use it to pay down your debt, which helps with your interest payments, which helps with your cash flow during the course of a year. Two, you take that money, and we did this a lot when we took on partners in Miami, or when we took upfront money from TV networks, we use that to pay the operating deficit for a particular year when we wanted a higher payroll than we knew we could afford. So the second reason to take on money is to handle the fact that you're over budget in a particular year or years. And the third reason is when you take on money that is purposed for some capital improvement. In this case, is the money being taken in to be used as a contribution to a new ballpark in an as yet undetermined location without a budget, without any plan at all? I would tell you the third one is unlikely, though possible. And I would say the first two are the far more likely, which is paying down debt or dealing with your deficits that you have in your business this year and next.
Well, that's interesting, because I think that's what we had talked about earlier, David. And I think when you look at the local specifics here in Chicago, earlier this week, the Chicago Fire, the soccer team, announced plans to build a $650 million soccer stadium in the South Loop, and that is a patch of land that still has room for a baseball stadium as well. The White Sox have been linked to Related Midwest, and they wanted them to be the anchor tenant. So I think what we're hearing from you, there's nothing about this news that discounts that possibility from, or maybe the hope from existing, that they could be closer to building the ballpark or starting that project. And maybe, as you suggest, there will be funds additional to increase the payroll. Is that taking too far of a leap?
I would say, and I don't want to, I love you and I love Chicago. I just don't want you to go to bed tonight thinking that Justin Ishbia and his money are your saviors, and that all of a sudden your payroll is going to go up $100 million and all of a sudden there's going to be a ballpark deal announced tomorrow. That's not how it works. It is far more subtle than that, what this transaction was. It was far more based in legal requirements than in any sort of, hey, we're going to be World Series champions in the next year or two. I think that the stadium deal is complicated. What the Chicago Fire did, the White Sox can't do. The White Sox cannot and will not and should not build an arena with private funds. You need a partnership with the public. And what the Fire are doing, it was good PR, but they're going to need public money, too, for infrastructure improvements around the 78 loop. So to me, the White Sox and the Bears are all fighting to figure out who's going to get money, how, in order to get the stadiums and arenas they want. And what the Fire did was not really upstage them. It was really a separate deal.
So, David, what is in it for the Ishbias?
It's a great question. So there's nothing more limiting than being a limited partner. And you can bet your sweet Bippy that Justin Ishbia will not be at owner's meeting sitting next to Jerry voting for who's going to be the next commissioner. You can bet that Justin Ishbia will not be calling Jerry and saying, you know what, I think we should sign Ohtani. There are certain privileges and rights that you get when you are involved in a step transaction like this, where you could have some say for certain things, like a stadium, for example, how a stadium gets built or funded or financed, because that will impact you when you take over way down the line. But for short-term decisions, I would argue that Ishby is no different than you are. He's just paying a lot more for the privilege.
So then in the context of the way you just described everything the previous 5 minutes or so, is this progress or is this status quo?
Well, progress to what?
Progress to begin. We're living in a market in a city where every time you go to a White Sox game, you're likely to hear a chant, sell the team, sell the team. I think Jerry Reinsdorf yesterday made a statement and an announcement that he has sold the team. And I think a lot of people have interpreted that as progress. So I don't think it sounds like you would make that.
Listen,
determination.
If you guys stop chanting sell the team because of a deal that could happen 9 years from now, then God bless you. You don't have the intestinal fortitude that I thought all Chicagoans had. I would say that you just need to add three letters to your chant instead of sell the team, sell the team. How about this one? Sell the team now, sell the team now, sell the team now. You could add those three letters. Maybe that's progress.
I don't want to be crude in any way about this, but is it, you have a couple of business people here. You got one guy betting he's going to live forever and you got another guy betting he's not. Is it as simple as that?
So you're asking a great question, which is, does death, and I want Jerry as much as he despises me these days, sadly, and I still love him, always will. Is Ishbia rooting for Jerry to croak? Is that really what's going on behind the scenes? And the answer is yes, because in a death event, and of course I have not seen the documents yet, and I don't want to be irresponsibly a journalist, which I'm not, but I would imagine that death does something to this transaction, like accelerates it. There are clauses that you put in these transactions where any change of status in terms of breathing is an accelerant to the takeover provisions. So I would assume that Jerry's death would mean that Ishbia would take over faster than 2034 or even 29 to 33 when it's Jerry's option. But I haven't seen the agreement, so I don't know, but I'll bet you a dollar that's the case.
Before we let you go, we need to ask you a baseball question. Actually, it's something that is including an opinion you have of something going on the field. The Royals are in town tonight. They will play the White Sox at Wright Field at 6:40. Jack Caglione will be in the Royals lineup, presumably. He was called up this week, less than a year after he was drafted sixth overall. I gather from your social media posts that you're not in favor of that move and are highly against it. Why?
Boy, I'm getting crushed and I don't know why. It's the easiest analysis in the history of the world. If they had called him up in April, I'd be like, hey, all right, that's nice. But by calling him up in the beginning of June, all you had to do is wait two more weeks and you would delay his arbitration by a full year. That means instead of paying him $900,000, you're going to end up having to pay him, let's say, $4 million. So you cost yourself $3 million. And then the year after, instead of paying him that $3 million as a first-year arbitration player, you may have to pay him $8 million. So that's another $5 million. which means you just wasted $8 to $10 million in order to get an extra 2 weeks. If you're going to waste that money, you might as well call him up sooner and see what happens. And all the Kansas City people are saying, David, you obviously don't want to win. Of course I want to win. But I waited to bring up Miguel Cabrera until June 18th or 19th because then we got an extra year out of him. We won the World Series, which was great, but we got an extra year of him cheap because we knew he was going to be good. So if you know someone's going to be good, the worst day in the world to call him up is the first week in June. I just don't get it.
Great stuff, David. Really appreciate your time. Really good, interesting stuff.
Thanks, David.
Have a great day.
You too.
That's David Sampson.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Grilling season is in full swing, and Whole Foods Market has the essentials to make summer meals simple, flavorful, and affordable. With great everyday prices across the store, it's easy to build a crowd-pleasing spread without sacrificing quality. The 365 by Whole Foods Market brand offers a wide selection of grilling favorites, like no antibiotics ever chicken thighs, ground beef, wild-caught salmon burgers, and uncured hot dogs. There are also plenty of sides to choose from, including organic salad kits, kettle cooked chips, tortilla chips, and bold zesty salsas. For toppings and marinades, look for organic condiments like no sugar added ketchup and yellow mustard, plus spice rubs and sauces to bring extra flavor. To round things out, pick up sparkling water, organic lemonade, and pints of ice cream, plus organic cake cones for an easy summer dessert. There are so many ways to save on summer grilling favorites at Whole Foods Market.